Welcome to Pretend I Know Nothing About. I'm Katie White, your host, administrator of COAAA. On today's episode, we will be learning about what it's like to be a new supervisor. We'll hear from Bruce Rodeback in Care Transitions, as well as Leslie Miller in Assessment. Let's get into it. Well, welcome to the show, Bruce and Leslie. We are excited to have you here today. I've got Bruce Rodeback, Care Transition Supervisor, and Leslie Miller, Assessment Supervisor, here on the show today. And we are going to talk about the new soup group and what it's like to be a new supervisor. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Leslie, please tell us a little bit about yourself, your role, how you got here. Let's get to know you.
Okay, so I actually have been with COAAA for, it'll be 20 years in April.
Wow.
And I started out before we had split between case management and assessor. So I was a case management.
In which program?
A case manager in Passport.
Great.
And then when we did the split, I think it was 2015.
Okay.
I decided to go to assessor because I like things that are, I like to be in and out. When I work with people, I was an ER social worker for 10 and a half years. So okay. I felt like that, and I always liked that. And I felt like that gelled more with doing with what I did as in the ER.
Okay.
So I was an ER social worker, and then I was an ER social worker in for 10 and a half years in the 90s. But then I got became the assessment supervisor a little bit over a year ago.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I've definitely talked to case managers and assessors, and there is a difference between ongoing engagement, and some people really want that, and kind of the in and out, like you described. So they're different skill sets, they're different comfort levels and passions, and we need both. So it's great. Well, thank you. And Bruce, how about you?
Yeah, I have been at COAAA. I'm going on 8 years. It'll be 8 years in November. I started off an internship at a nursing facility here in Columbus. And then shortly after that, when I graduated in 2016, I came over here. So I spent the majority of my professional career at COAAA. I started off in the Aetna MyCare Waiver Program in November of 2016. I did multiple roles in that program until February of 2023, where I transitioned over to Care Transitions, and I've been a supervisor since.
That's great. So you were in which facility?
I was at Wexner Heritage House.
Oh, great. Okay.
Village?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's a good one.
Yes.
All right. So we are with two semi-new supervisors. And what we learned on an episode about COAAA University is that we also have this quote unquote new soup group. So we had a big influx in new supervisors in 2023 and a little bit into 24. And so this group comes together and you guys have some education and bonding. But I want to get to know even more about that. So tell me a little bit about the new soup group, Leslie.
So as you said, we do have education and bonding. I think for me, what was really helpful is when I was an assessor, if I had a difficult case, I could talk with my coworkers about it. You know, if I was walking down the hall, how are you? And I'd say, oh, I just had this. When you're a supervisor, you can't really do that.
Okay. Tell me more about that.
I didn't feel it was appropriate to talk with everybody about what I was doing. So
some of the challenges.
So it was really nice to have people that I did feel that I could share that with, that, you know, that they got me, they understood what I was going through, and that I was able to get understanding and support.
Yeah. They're your peers, right? So thinking about how the work shifts from being the person doing the work to being the person supporting and overseeing the work, that is a lot of shifting in terms of skills and all of that. Got it. Okay. And Bruce, a little bit more about the soup group. So what kinds of stuff do you guys talk about?
So we talk about how to deal with, you know, obviously our staff. And I guess the biggest thing that I've really taken to heart is my age and supervising people who are much older than me, who have been in the profession much longer than me, or even I supervise multiple nurses. So I'm a social worker who is supervising nurses. So just dealing with that kind of thing and how to go about doing that in a respectful manner, but also making sure that, you know, you get your message across while still being so new and not knowing a lot of things. And I guess like that's the best thing that I've learned, is because my situation is somewhat unique because, like I said before, I started off in Aetna My Care, and I was in Aetna My Care until I became a supervisor in another program. That's very unique because most people become a supervisor in the program they've been in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm like, I think one of maybe two in our small group that has transitioned to a whole new department. So that's been a huge challenge for me, and just learning from everybody in that group has been great. Not just about supervising, but also learning about other programs, because you stay in your little cohort for so long. And when you're thrown into agency-wide things, you learn a lot more about the agency than just your little group of Aetna or Molina or, you know, Passport, things like that. So just learning from everybody and how different everybody does things, just because every program has their different needs, their different requirements, their all that stuff. So just taking a little bit from everybody has been really helpful.
So I didn't think about the difference between becoming like, so Leslie, you were an assessor, and then you were able to be promoted into assessment supervisor. But then you make a good point, Bruce, that you were an Aetna, so you knew all things Aetna, but you weren't then moving into a supervisor there. So you had to learn a whole new program as you were also learning about yourself as a supervisor. Exactly. And learning those supervising skills.
And that's kind of been like my biggest struggles I've had being a new supervisor. I've learned a lot about myself in the last year, but also a lot about the, you know, the program, and a program that I'm with that is constantly growing and changing and moving. It's not so set in stone like some of the other programs within COAAA. But also, like, I was thinking, like, I'm very unique because my program is very small. And until just the end of December, we only had me as one supervisor and then our clinical manager, Lisa Castro. So I didn't have anybody to go to other than Lisa to talk to things about, where other programs obviously have multiple supervisors. So the small soup group has really helped me interact with people that I normally wouldn't interact with.
Okay.
And learn a lot from them. So we have a large supervisor group, and then we break off into smaller groups. And Leslie is actually in my small group.
Oh, you're in the small group together. Good.
And everybody in my small group were all from different departments, which is great because I'm learning just how everybody is doing things. And in our small group, that's what we really do. We really kind of vent to each other and throw ideas around and try and figure out, you know, problem solve. Mm-hmm. Just because we don't always get that as a supervisor in our own program.
Sure.
So like, just problem solving and figuring out, like, what are you running into and how are you, you know, working through that. So that's kind of what we're doing in the small group, which is what I really appreciate. The big group is great, but the one-on-one interaction with the small group is what's really gotten me through some difficult times in the last year with the career change and just all the challenges of being a supervisor, but also being a new supervisor in a new program.
Yeah. So in the COAAA University episode, we talked about how they were intentionally creating these cohorts. So because the agency is so big, it's easy to kind of come in here and get swallowed up and feel like you're on an island. But with these new programs that we're working in, like the university, like the soup group and different trainings, we're working to create those cohorts so that people do have peers and people they can go to support. So it sounds like that's working. So yes. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. So, Leslie, in the big soup group, there are some specific topics you guys all cover. Like, is there always education? And then there's just Q&A. What does a big soup group event look like?
So each small group is in charge of some kind of activity at the beginning. So kind of like an icebreaker kind of activity. And then there's usually a topic that we talk about, or we've had guest speakers, you know, related to supervision. And then it's, you know, discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
So again, it's a lot about learning, but then also about just team building and building that trust and knowing that if you have a question, you've got people to go to support you. Okay. So now when I think about being a new supervisor, there's a leadership component, but there's also a lot of just very tangible requirements that come along with that, right? Whether it's supervision or reviews. Bruce, take me through a little bit about what it's like to be a supervisor, kind of your typical day or week.
So, again, my program is very not straightforward. Every day is very different, but usually my typical week is reviewing charts, going through data, because again, my program is new and we're innovative. So we're trying to look at what's working, what's not working, and adjusting how we approach things based off of data that we're pulling, based off of things that our staff is telling us. So, I'm very lucky. I supervise only 5 people. I know that is very unique in our agency. So I am very blessed by that, because it does give me the opportunity to spend more one-on-one time with people and actually work through issues and, help them, learn and grow from things, that I'm noticing in their documentation or just any confusion that they may have. So obviously meeting with, our upper management, Lisa Castro and Melissa Galtieri, who are just constantly, you know, dealing with new needs and new things that are coming up, and just workshopping those. So that's kind of what we do throughout the week. And then just supporting my staff, going out on visits.
Okay.
I'm just shadowing them to make sure, you know, that everybody feels safe, but also that we're getting the results that we want for our new programs that we're creating.
And then do you do the annual reviews for everyone?
I do. I've only done a couple, but so I guess that's like been the biggest thing, is just there is a lot that goes into those annual reviews. And obviously it's very important, not just for us to do them correctly, but also it could, you know, obviously affect the staff members' merit raise, but also, you know, any potential
performance,
thank you, that they may have in the future. Okay. So I've done 3 so far, and each one has been, I've grown. I'm sure the first one was not the greatest, but the second one and third one hopefully has gotten better. I usually send those back and just ask for feedback from Lisa Castro, and then Melissa Galtieri obviously also reviews those. But so that's kind of been the biggest, another big challenge is just learning all those supervisory things, mm-hmm. because there isn't a whole lot of grace period for those kind of things. You just kind of like got to do it and learn from that, which has been something that is challenging, but the way of doing it is just by doing it. Right. So I do feel like I've grown just with the couple that I've done and learning. I actually recently bought a book on performance reviews and how to document those. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I apologize.
That's great.
But just learning stuff like that, like stuff that obviously you don't learn in school or as a social worker or as a nurse, but just learn by doing it and then kind of adjusting based off of the results of that. So each staff member has a monthly supervision where we go over their caseloads, any issues that they've run into, concerns, any improvements that, you know, we're looking at. So we do that once a month with every staff member. New staff, we're meeting with them weekly just to check in, make sure that, you know, everything's going well, because we try to be very proactive instead of reactive. So we want to try and make sure that they are getting the support they need so that they can continue to grow, and we can foster that growth the way that we want to. So
great. So you are supervising a program that's new. And so it's also a lot of creating and designing and implementing processes and changing those. Whereas Leslie, in assessment as a supervisor, it's very regimented, right? In terms of like the processes and what's required and things like that. And it's an established program. So tell me a little bit about your typical day or week and maybe contrast of what that looks like for Bruce since his program is newer.
So even though it is established, we have frequent changes just like everyone else. So it's okay. It's kind of making new procedures, new route sheets. Mm. I have trained, I'm in the process still of training four people.
Four new people?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Right.
That takes a lot out of you.
Since I started. Okay. Yeah. I have four people that have been under a year,
okay.
One just a month. And yeah, so a lot of training. And luckily, I have a coworker and she and I help each other with the training.
Oh, good.
So we might, do something to train two people at the same time and take turns with that. So a lot of training. And then, you know, when people are newer, especially a lot of review, chart reviews, you know, in coaching, mm-hmm. and taking calls a lot of times because the assessors might be out,
okay,
and then issues might come up with the consumers. So taking calls from the consumers and family members, and especially we do passport and assisted living, and so a lot of the assisted living assessments are pretty timely as far as that, you know, something needs to be done quickly because the person has, you know, might be at risk of losing their spot in okay. the assisted living facility. So a lot of times, sometimes I need to act on those cases when the person is either out on visits or out on vacation or works part-time. I have a couple of people that work part-time. So handling those kinds of things. Planning, doing supervision with all of my staff and, I've done a lot of performance appraisals. I seem to have a whole bunch due at one time. And then, I'm actually preparing to go out on a medical leave. So I need to prepare the performance appraisals that would be due when I'm out. So,
okay. And
yeah.
So, a route sheet. Can you describe mm-hmm. to me what a route sheet is and some examples
yeah.
that you have route sheets for?
So a route sheet is telling people really step by step, you know, telling the assessors, you know, what they need to do for the assessments. And so we have route sheets for our regular passport assessments, route sheets, a different route sheet for assisted living waiver assessments, a different route sheet for if somebody is a transfer from another area agency on aging to our site. Maybe mm-hmm. they're in a nursing home in a different area agency on aging, but they're coming back to their home that happens to be in our area or okay. vice versa, if they're going to be going from our site to another site. So that those, you know, all have different procedures. And we've had a lot of changes, especially with assisted living. So we're constantly needing to revamp the route sheets.
So the route yeah. sheets are part educational step-by-step, but then also sort of a checks and balances to make sure we're not missing anything within the everyday tasks and things that we need to do.
Right.
And route sheets are not unique to assessment. They exist all over the agency. Mm-hmm. And I think it's another one of those examples of our clinical excellence of making sure that we are, you know, meeting all of our requirements, looking at efficiency, making updates, and making sure that, you know, we're always meeting all of our demands.
Right. And sometimes you realize, oh, we all do all this because we just know, or some of us do, but it's really not on the route sheet.
Yeah.
We need to add that on the route sheet.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
That kind of thing. As far as the changes and realizing that, you know, we need to add thanks to the route sheet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some similarities in terms of supervision and meeting with people and problem solving. When I think about the difference between being a case manager or an assessor and moving into a supervision role, I feel like some of the surprising things for people are how much administrative work there is, just in terms of approving timesheets and the supervision and time off and all of those kinds of things. A lot of problem solving, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
Probably a few difficult conversations here and there, which are their own unique beast that you have to kind of figure out and get used to. The reviews, the supervision, the team meetings. And so for people that are interested in becoming supervisors, sort of what are some of those unique things that you now have to do as a supervisor that you might not have anticipated?
So I'll start. Like the hardest thing is that I guess I didn't quite understand being a case manager for so long, how difficult middle management is. Mm-hmm. It's extremely difficult because you're not just as a case manager, you're just kind of responsible for yourself. Mm-hmm. As a supervisor, you are responsible for your case managers, but also making sure that you are meeting the requirements set by your clinical manager. So trying to balance all of that and being literally that middleman is something that I was kind of taken back by on not that I wasn't expecting it, but just not expecting how intense it is, because obviously you do want to make sure that your case managers are heard, but we also have to follow the rules set by these insurance companies and the grants that we are receiving to provide these services. So it's a balancing act that I continue to try and work on every day. Making sure that I'm meeting the requirements on my staff, but also making sure I'm meeting the requirements by my upper management team. So I guess that's like the biggest thing is that middle management is hard.
Yeah.
Just to like reiterate, that's why this supervisor group is so great, because we're all on the same boat. We're all new to this. We're all experiencing this at the same time. So anything that we're doing, we can really learn from each other.
Leslie, anything that is kind of maybe not surprising, but something that you weren't necessarily anticipating as you moved into this role? And it's okay if that's no.
I mean, there's a lot that I hadn't anticipated. When I was an assessor and I thought, oh, why aren't things done this way? This makes more sense. It would make our job easier. You know, unfortunately, it's kind of like you might look at when I was looking at a consumer, I would like to do this for this person. But then you need to look at what is reality and what's possible. And so I, you know, have to do the same thing with my team, that I would like to do this, but what is the reality and what's possible? Mm-hmm. So definitely that, just that I do have to get used to having difficult conversations, especially with people who were my peers. So that's sometimes a challenge. Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking about as you kind of move into higher level supervision or manager roles, there's at least for me, there's a pressure of knowing. And there's a pressure of not being able to tell. And then there's a pressure of trying to make sure everyone feels supported within all of those different pieces. But, the more you know, the more confidentiality basically that comes with a role. Mm-hmm. And then the harder it is to make sure your team knows you're really there for them. But
exactly.
XYZ is not possible. I can't necessarily tell you all the details as to why, but I want you to know that I hear you and I'm advocating, but you know, here's the reality.
Yeah. I just to kind of piggyback off of that. Yeah. That is the other thing is like, I always want to give the why, because I feel like that will eliminate a lot of the frustration, but we can't always give the why because things are constantly changing and moving, but we may not even know the why at the time.
Right.
So, right. Just trying to let them know that I understand your frustration. That this is the requirement that is being set forth. So we have to follow that.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. Cause Leslie was saying, was when I was a case manager, I was always like, why are we doing these things? Why are we doing these things? Not realizing that there's a lot more to it than this, a supervisor saying, please do this.
Yeah.
And cause they may not know the why themselves.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. No, I think that's well said. And, a lot of clear communication to the extent possible and validating and really showing up for people goes a long way with supervisors. And I feel like that was something when I attended the new soup group that you all were sharing some of those kind of best practices and making sure people felt supported too. So we talked a little bit about some things that were surprising or not anticipated, but what about a success story or a favorite story? When you think about yourself as a new supervisor, what's something that you're proud of or a successful example?
I have a holiday card I got with just really nice things that everyone wrote. So if I'm having a bad day, for my team, sometimes I look at that.
That's wonderful. I have a happy inbox folder, happy folder in my email. And I put stuff in there and same thing, because there are bad days. And then you have to go in there and you're like, no, I'm doing a good job. I like that one. Bruce, how about you?
The thing that comes to mind is I'm very hard on myself and nobody's a bigger critic. I'm my biggest critic. So I'm always feeling like I'm not doing well enough or failing my team. So when I have staff come up to me and just say, thank you for, going through this process with me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for helping me through X, Y, or Z. That really reiterates to me that I am doing well, and that I am learning and I have to be graceful to myself, because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So, that's the biggest thing, is just having staff say thank you and, just feeling like I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So,
yeah. And being a supervisor isn't necessarily something that people are born with, those skills, right? Being a skilled supervisor is definitely learned. And so just because one day you are a case manager and assessor and the next day you're a supervisor doesn't mean you're going to have all the answers, doesn't mean you're going to know how to do everything. Mm-hmm. But again, building that rapport and trust with your team to say, or to be humble enough to say, I don't know, but I'm going to work on that. Or, just being authentic, I think goes a long way.
Yeah. Like just to add to that, like I constantly, if I mess up, I tell my team, I'm sorry, that was on me.
Yeah.
I learned from this. I messed up. We'll grow from this together. So just letting them know that like, I'm not perfect by any stretch.
Yeah.
Which I think is huge, just because it kind of reiterates that to the staff that, wow, they're learning as well. And it's okay if I mess up because they mess up too.
Yeah.
So.
I try to say to myself what I would say to someone on my team if they felt like they made a mistake or I try to say that to myself. What would I tell somebody that I'm trying to supervise if they were encountering that?
If they made this mistake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really good way to think about it because I think we all are easy to be hard on ourselves. But there's also a factor of taking on a new supervisory role in and of itself is a challenge. And so just a testament to saying, I'm not going to know everything, but I'm going to work hard to get there and to be there, be as good as I can. And I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to forgive myself just like I would forgive you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's impossible to be perfect, right? Especially around here in clinical work, because people are people-y, right? And things, there's no way to control everything. Bruce, you mentioned a book that you are reading. Are there any other articles or quotes, or what are some things as you've stepped into, or even as you are preparing to be a supervisor, that kind of motivated you both to want to take this next step?
I have received several books from staff here who are supervisors, who are still supervisors. I read quite a few of those. I've listened to a lot of podcasts. I've listened to a lot of your podcast about leadership and everything.
Bonus points.
Also the city of Columbus offers a lot of great classes online. You don't even have to go to the building downtown that help you prepare to be a supervisor by just looking up. You can just go to the the education, City of Columbus education courses, you can just type in supervisor and it'll pop up with classes that you can take, go in person or watch online, just helping you to learn how to be a supervisor, but how to supervise people and all the stuff you have to do when it comes to performance reviews and things like that. So I've really utilized the resources that we have.
Good.
But also, I appreciate the, I have, you know, people giving me great books to read, and I do read those, and I listen to podcasts about being a supervisor, being a leader. That's been really the thing that I've been doing a lot, is just listening to, so I can multitask, because we're all so busy. So those podcasts are great, because you can listen, and a lot of that resonates with what we do. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Leslie, how about you? Anything to add?
I mean, I would say, you know, we do have a lot of resources, like on our the HR for supervisors. I use a lot of those materials. I got that same book about writing performance appraisals. I think someone had suggested it in our meeting. I think, you know, just having been at this agency and really remembering the things that I really love about it, you know, and how I would want to be supervised, has helped me.
Yeah. I love that introspective that you have on that. So someone that is thinking that they might want to be a supervisor and, thinking about applying, what would you recommend that they, either, you know, read or attend, or just even ask themselves in their process of considering applying to be a supervisor?
I would say, one, go on to the City of Columbus website where we have all those courses, and just review some of those. But also, the thing that I think is really helpful is just going to your supervisor that you are currently supervising you, and getting some thoughts and ideas out there from them, like, you know, what can I do? Go to your supervisor and say, what can I do? I'm looking at becoming a supervisor. What are some things I can do now to really help improve on, you know, my resume to help me become a supervisor here at COAAA? Because we've all been there. We've all, not all of us have, you know, most of us have not started out as a supervisor immediately within the agency. So I would just go to your supervisor and ask, you know, maybe they'll mentor you and really take you under their wing and kind of help you get to a point where you feel confident enough to apply for a supervisory position. And then that'll give you a leg up on other applicants. So yeah, I would just say, utilizing the resources that the City of Columbus has for us, which is a lot, but also just reaching out to supervisors within our own agency and just, you know, kind of having them mentor you.
Yeah, great. Anything to add?
I would say maybe also if there's somebody that you can really relate to that is a supervisor, just really having an honest discussion with them about what are some of the pros, what are some of the cons, and, you know, do you think it's something that I would like to do?
Mm-hmm. Being really open and honest about the work with someone that knows you. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Got it. Great. So we've got time for the miracle questions. So I love this one. What is one thing you would change or add about COAAA?
Pay people more money.
Okay. Popular answer.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just to add on to that a little bit, that is one of the biggest challenges as a supervisor that you run into is people not being paid what they deem necessary and having limited to no ways of fixing that for them.
Sure.
And that's usually the thing that, you know, most people are upset about is their pay, or, you know, the rate, their yearly raise. You can do everything. We can do everything on our end, but it's really out of our control just because of the way the setup is within the City of Columbus. So I kind of agree with that one. The other thing I would agree with is just, in the ideal world is just we've gotten so, especially since COVID, we've gotten so stuck into our little group and not realizing that there's so many great people in this agency that we can lean on and help and support and vice versa. Just expanding that, not staying in your little pod, which is what most people want to do because it's comfortable.
Yeah.
So being comfortable with being uncomfortable. So that's like the thing is that there is, you can learn a lot from a lot of people. There's a lot of great, smart people at this agency, who can really help you, propel, you know, your career. If whether that's, you know, you want to see a case manager, become a better case manager, or be, you know, work into manage upper management, is just really getting out of that comfort zone. Cause I moved from one program to a program I knew nothing about, and it made me very uncomfortable, but I have grown a lot as a person in that year. So,
yeah. So some opportunities to kind of learn from people across the agency. And regarding pay, speaking of the knowing and not being able to share all of the things, but we are on contracts. So I'm not sure if everybody knows how our budget works, but we self-fund ourselves. And so when we negotiate a contract increase or not getting an increase, then that obviously in turn affects what we can or cannot pay. We did recently go through a pay equity review and we increased to the point that we could and with, you know, within different constraints. But yeah, the pay isn't necessarily all within our control, and there's a lot of variables that go in it. So, okay, any final thoughts that you want people to know about being a new soup or a new soup group?
I mean, I've always enjoyed teaching, and so that's, you know, one of my favorite parts about being a supervisor. And, you know, I love this agency, so I really want to, instill that in other people and help new people really be happy here and feel like this is a place for them.
That's great. And teaching, yeah, that's a huge piece. We've talked about supporting and things like that, but yeah, teaching is a huge role of a supervisor too. And I could see if that is a skill or an interest of people, that teaching would be a good thing to think about. Oh, maybe I would be a good supervisor because I like to teach. Great. Bruce?
Again, just to kind of piggyback off of Leslie, I would say that, teaching is that the opportunity to teach is really empowering for me. But also this agency is great and there is a lot of great people here. So just continuing to really let people know like this is some place that you could really grow become the best version of yourself here. And there's so much support with management and everybody wants everybody to succeed. But also we want to provide, you know, the best care possible for the people of Central Ohio. And really, I feel like we're doing a heck of a job at doing that with the very limited resources and very limited things that we have here. We're just doing great.
I love it. Well, thank you both so much for being on. I appreciate your time and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I hope now you know something about being a supervisor at COAAA.